Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. Editor-publisher Will Brumlevy's dog, Puppy Skunk, has passed away. He devotes a good deal of this week's edition to Puppy Skunk, but we're going to skip over that. Instead, we'll go straight to the headline up above the fold on the front page. Ongoing investigation into alleged misconduct. Letter details claims versus Dinkins. Fired teacher and coach allegedly sent inappropriate texts to students, spent time with them one-on-one. Gibson City. The allegations of misconduct that led to last month's firing of Gibson City Melvin Sibley teacher and coach Robbie Dinkins and an ongoing police investigation, including claims that he maintained inappropriate relationships with students, spending time with them one-on-one and alone, both at school and at his home, and communicating with them via text outside of school day, sometimes about his own or their own personal matters. Via a Freedom of Information Act request, the Ford County Chronicle on Thursday obtained a copy of a letter that the school board sent via certified mail to Dinkins following the April 23rd termination of his employment. The letter included a bill of particulars, all 5 pages of which were entirely redacted, and a statement of charges against Dinkins, while specifically noting the ongoing investigation by Gibson City Police and the possibility of the charges being amended, depending upon its outcome. On Friday, Gibson City Chief of Police Adam Rosendahl said the investigation was still pending. Once finished, a special prosecutor from the appellate prosecutor's office will consider whether to file criminal charges. Dinkins, who was given 17 days from his receipt of the school board's April 23rd letter to request a hearing to appeal the termination of his employment, told the Ford County Chronicle on Friday that he plans to do so. GCMS Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said the deadline is Sunday, May 11th, and no request had been received yet as of Friday, May 2nd. Dinkins, who taught 8th grade math and coached 8th grade boys basketball and boys track at GCMS Middle School, and was head coach of the Fisher GCMS High School Cooperative Soccer Team, declined further comment on the situation when reached by phone on Friday. Under the Illinois Code, Dinkins can request a hearing before either a mutually agreed-upon hearing officer, with the cost split between the board and Dinkins, or a board-selected hearing officer paid in full by the board through the Illinois State Board of Education. The request must be submitted in writing to Darnell by the deadline for it to be forwarded to the ISBE, the school board's April 23rd letter to Dinkins noted. Dinkins' dismissal came on the heels of an initial investigation into his conduct by a third-party investigator, attorney Stephanie Jones, of the Crea Busek law firm. That investigation established the evidence contained in a bill of particulars on which the board's statement of charges against Dinkins is based. While the entire bill of particulars was redacted when obtained by the Chronicle, in order to remove personally identifiable information regarding students, Darnell explained, the statement of charges against Dinkins was not. The statement of charges alleges, among other things, that Dinkins violated Board Policy 5:120 regarding professional and appropriate employee conduct by repeatedly crossing the boundaries between employee-student to such an extent that the parents of the students listed in the bill of particular perceived his actions as the grooming of these children for sexual abuse. You took all these actions despite all staff receiving specific training on grooming and what could be perceived as grooming on August 21, 2024 and August 16, 2023, the board said in its statement of charges. The board said Dinkins sent text messages to students from his personal phone about non-school business, including texts sent late at night that significantly cross the boundaries of a student-teacher or athlete-coach relationship, causing the student's distress over Dinkins' safety and state of mind. Such texts were overly personal, disclosing information that was not appropriate for minor children, such as his loved one's death, the board said. You acknowledged to the students at the time and to the investigator that some of your text messages were sent while you were intoxicated, said the board's letter to Dinkins. You confided in students regarding personal matters related to adult issues and then solicited support from them. You asked students to keep information between the two of you. The late-night text messages were often unrelated to school or sports, the board said. During these text conversations, you spoke to students about their personal lives and your personal life, the board said. You claim that these conversations were from a position of support, but the conversations crossed the boundary of what is appropriate for a student-teacher or coach-athlete relationship. Dinkins also invited students to do things with him on a one-to-one basis, the board said, noting that he invited students to his home to use his athletic training equipment, organize soccer equipment, have meals, or just hang out, and regularly opened the school gym for students, sometimes spending time with them alone at either location. Dinkins also allegedly was alone with students in his personal vehicle. Dinkins also repeatedly and overtly showed affection towards students beyond the bounds of the student-teacher or athlete-coach relationship by hugging them in public and telling them he loves them in either private or public, the board said. You used your students as confidants, leaning on minor children for support for your own mental health issues, the board said. Dinkins also is alleged to have violated Board Policy 5125 regarding the use of personal technology and or social media by staff by failing to adhere to high standards for professional and appropriate conduct while using his personal device, and by failing to use school district-provided platforms for communication with students and families. On July 1, 2024, and on several dates following July 1, 2024, you and all other staff were specifically directed to use specific district-managed platforms for communicating with students and families, which include ThrillShare and Remind, the board wrote to Dinkins. Notwithstanding this directive, you continued to communicate with your student-athletes via text message from your personal phone. You sent multiple text messages to students containing private information about yourself. You used your personal device to arrange time with students outside of school, including time where you would be alone with students. You used your personal device to seek support from students for your personal issues. Also alleged were violations of Board Policy 5130. Regarding the responsibilities of staff to safeguard confidential information about students. You disclosed personal information regarding other students to the students you were texting, the board's letter to Dinkins said. In particular, you discussed the reasons why one student was no longer on the soccer team with another student. Dinkins also allegedly violated the Illinois Code of Educator Ethics by failing to demonstrate a high level of professional judgment, by failing to develop and maintain professional relationships with parents, families, and communities, and by failing to comply with state and federal laws and regulations via multiple breaches of staff-student boundaries, the board said. You developed trusting relationships with students and their families and then violated that trust when you allowed these relationships to cross the professional boundaries expected by a teacher and a coach, the board said. In 7 years as the head soccer coach of the Fisher GCMS Bunnies, Dinkins posted a 116-win, 24-loss, and 9-tie record, including an IHSA Class 1A round of 16 postseason appearance last fall. Before coaching the 8th grade boys basketball team in the 2024-2025 season, Dinkins served as an assistant coach for the high school boys basketball team as well. Prior to working at GCMS, he was an eighth grade student teacher at Wilmington Middle School in fall of 2011 and worked in a sixth grade teaching practicum at Franklin Middle School in fall of 2010 and as an eighth grade practicum at Cumberland Middle School in Toledo in the spring of 2011. He previously was employed as a forklift operator at FedEx in Effingham in the summer of 2010, as a driver and service technician for Wilmington Backyard Pools in Wilmington in the summers of 2008 and 2009, and as a laborer for J.P. Larson in Chicago in 2006, and as a forklift operator at Menards in Joliet in 2005 and 2006. From Iroquois County, we have solar battery storage project proposed in Buckley area. Lewis Creek Solar Project eyed for 2026 construction, the firm says. Buckley. A solar farm and energy storage facility are planned for north of Buckley in Iroquois County. Last week, community members gathered at Christ Lutheran High School in Buckley for an information open house on the proposed solar and energy storage project known as Lewis Creek Solar. The project is being developed by Alium Renewable Energy, LLC of Chicago, which plans to build it on 380 acres of land in Artesia Township, about 2 miles north of Buckley, according to the project's website, www.lewiscreeksolar.com. Construction of the 50-megawatt solar farm and 10-megawatt battery storage facilities is projected to begin in early 2026 and be completed by the first quarter of 2027, when it would be put into full operation. The Lewis Creek Solar is currently in the advanced design phase and has reached an agreement to connect to the electrical grid with the host utility company, Ameren, the website said. We are now pursuing the necessary land use permits and agreements with both Iroquois County and Artesia Township. David Griscom, Director of Project Development, said Monday via email that after the county has approved the relevant ordinances, we will apply for a conditional use permit. Timing for the county board is expected in mid to late summer. Griscom said the project is located on the property of only three participating landowners. The $100 million project is expected to produce enough renewable energy to power about 8,000 homes annually, while creating more than 100 local jobs and generating economic benefits that include an estimated $8 million to $9 million in new local property tax revenue over the project's lifespan to the Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District, the Buckley Fire Protection District, Parkland Community College, Iroquois County, and Artesia Township. We are excited to contribute to the economic vitality of Iroquois County, Griscom said. Our investment of more than $100 million will produce taxes and income over the more than 30-year planned life of the project. Based on current conditions, we expect the property taxes alone will yield $8 to $9 million, supporting the township, the county, local schools, and the fire department. One of the greatest rewards in our business is the opportunity to meet and become part of the local community. We have been delighted at the warmth of our reception and look forward to growing our partnerships here. Can't wait to watch the Dutch Masters play at Schwai Field. According to the project's website, Alium Renewable Energy, LLC, was established in 2008 to originate, develop, finance, construct, and operate wind farms, solar power plants, and energy storage facilities. Griscom said the company is currently developing 4,000 megawatts of solar and wind projects across the country. With our pipeline of more than 3,500 megawatts of solar and wind projects, we are contributing to the country's energy self-sufficiency, renewability, and sustainability, powering the future, the website says. Back on the front page, we find from the Paxton City Council, backyard chickens on meeting agenda Tuesday in Paxton. Paxton. With the controversial topic of backyard chickens on the agenda, a joint meeting of the Paxton City Council's Community Committee and License, Permit, and Zoning Committee is scheduled for 6 p.m., immediately prior to the full Council 7 p.m. monthly meeting on Tuesday, May 13th, in the Council Hall Chambers on the second floor of City Hall on South Market Street. During the Council's April 8th meeting, a group of residents asked that the city's rules for backyard chickens be relaxed, and aldermen seemed receptive to at least continuing the discussion. Alderman Kristen Larson, chairman of the Community Committee and proponent of backyard chickens, suggested further talks occur soon at the committee level. While numerous nearby communities already allow backyard chickens, they can only be kept in Paxton if they are at least 150 feet from any home, church, school building, or public way, according to city code. Restrictions that make raising them impossible on most residential lots. "I don't think it's fair," Larson said on April 8th, "and it is apparent that there are quite a few residents interested in changing that. So I think this deserves further analysis and discussion." In urging the council to lift the ban on backyard chickens, residents noted that raising urban chickens can have educational value while helping increase self-reliance and reducing families' grocery budgets by providing a source of fresh eggs. Also noted was their value in enriching gardens by fertilizing the soil, plus the companionship they provide as pets. "I believe it would be of great benefit to many people in the community," said resident Derek Babs, who has established a Facebook group called Paxton Citizens for Chickens, and has been encouraging residents to sign a petition, available at Paxton Hardware and Rental, to try to get backyard chickens in Paxton. There are two sides to the debate, though. Resident Rebecca Rutledge has concerns, and she laid them out in an April 30th letter to the editor of the Ford County Chronicle. Her concerns include the additional duties that would be placed on local police officers who would presumably enforce the ordinance, an influx of wildlife that prey on livestock, a decline in property values, and exposure to increased feces and undesirable odors from those who will, no doubt, have no standards. Unquote. And from the Paxton Park District, Paxton Pool's opening delayed because its pump needs replaced. A new pump for pool to be ordered after drawings and specs are done. Paxton Park District announced Friday that the main pump for the community swimming pool at Cody Park is out of service and beyond repair, which will result in a delay in opening the pool this summer if it ends up opening at all. "After thorough evaluation and consultation with professionals, we are now moving forward with the necessary steps to replace the equipment and bring the pool back into working order," said Matt Quinlan, president of the district's Board of Commissioners. "The process is to restore operations involves several critical steps," Quinlan said. "First, Park District's engineer will submit the required drawings and specifications to the state inspector for review and approval. Then a new pump may be ordered. Once delivered, installation of the pump is anticipated to take only a few days," Quinlan said. "Unfortunately, due to the timing of the failure and the lead times involved in repairs and regulatory approvals, we want to communicate transparently that if there is a 2025 pool season, it will be delayed," Quinlan said. "We understand how important the pool is to our community, especially to our local families and youth during the summer months, and we share in your disappointment. Please know that we are actively exploring every possible option to accelerate this process and bring a timely solution to our residents. Our team is working diligently daily and collaboratively with engineers, contractors, and suppliers to seek alternatives that could potentially move the timeline forward. We extend our sincerest apologies for this inconvenience and appreciate your continued support and patience as we navigate this challenge. We will continue to provide updates as soon as new information becomes available." Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, May 7th. Ann M. Dreyer, Cisna Park. Ann M. Dreyer, 80, of Cisna Park, died Sunday, May 4th at her residence. Visitation will be from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Thursday, May 15th at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park, with a Nurses Honor Guard service at 10:40 a.m., followed by a funeral service at 11 a.m. with the Reverend Dale Fjordbotten officiating. Burial will follow in the Trinity Lutheran Cemetery near Cisna Park. Memorial donations may be made to the Trinity Lutheran Church or to an organization of the donor's choice. Charles Gooden, Sr., Paxton. Charles R. Gooden, Sr., 93, died Thursday, May 1st at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private family services will be held. Carol Lisa Neal, Gibson City. Carol Melissa Lisa Neal, 58, of Gibson City, died at 12:02 p.m. Friday, April 25th, at her daughter's home in Paxton. Funeral services were held Friday, May 2nd, at the Living Word Church in Roberts, with the Reverend Douglas Lee officiating. Burial followed in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Larry Olson, Gilman. Larry Olson, 74, of Gilman, died Monday, April 28th, at his residence. Graveside services were held Friday, May 2nd at Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville. Memorials may be made to the family's wishes. Janice A. Springer, Foosland. Janice A. Springer, 84, of Foosland, died Saturday, April 26th at Goldwater Care in Gibson City. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. Friday, May 9th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. Burial followed at Willowbrook Cemetery in Fisher. Memorials may be made to the Fisher High School Arts Program. We return to the news with a story from the Gibson City Police Department. Man charged after guns, drugs seized from home. Gibson City man released from jail because offenses weren't legally detainable. Gibson City. A Gibson City man remains free today despite his recent arrest on charges alleging he possessed multiple rounds of ammunition, two high-capacity magazines, and an assortment of illegal firearms, including one stolen guns and two others with defaced serial numbers, one being a ghost gun. John Morrow, 37, was arrested on Tuesday, April 29th, after Gibson City Police, assisted by the Ford County Sheriff's Office and Paxton Police, executed a search warrant at his home, where they seized the ammo, magazines, and guns, as well as 3.3 grams of suspected cocaine, a scale, and drug paraphernalia, Gibson Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said in a news release. Morrow, who listed an address at 224 South Church Street in Gibson City, was booked into the Ford County Jail in Paxton, but released that evening following an initial appearance before Judge Matt Fitton in Ford County Circuit Court. State's Attorney Andrew Killian said in an email statement Wednesday that he did not seek Morrow's pretrial detainment because his offenses did not qualify as detainable under the state's Safety Act. Following Mr. Morrow's arrest, Gibson City Police Officer Austin Rosenbaum and I met to review the charges and determine if any qualified as detainable under the Safety Act enacted under General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker, Killian said. None of the offenses Mr. Morrow was arrested for were deemed to be determined to be serious enough by the General Assembly or Governor Pritzker to permit me to file a petition to deny pretrial release, let alone a judge to enter an order denying pretrial release. Unless or until the Safety Act is amended or repealed, there will continue to be cases where individuals are released without the ability to hold a detention hearing because the hands of the prosecutors and judges across the state have been tied. So far, the General Assembly has shown little interest in adding additional offenses to the list of detainable charges. This was one of the reasons over 60 prosecutors across the state, including myself, filed suit to block the enactment of the Safety Act in the first place. According to Rosendahl, Morrow was arrested April 29th on charges of possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, a Class 2 felony, possession of a controlled substance, a Class 4 felony, possession of a firearm with a defaced serial number, a Class 3 felony, possession of a stolen firearm, a Class 2 felony, 3 counts of possession of a firearm with a revoked FOID card, a Class A misdemeanor, possession of ammunition with a revoked FOID card, a Class A misdemeanor, unlawful possession of a firearm with an unfinished frame and receiver, a Class A misdemeanor, child endangerment, a Class A misdemeanor, and 2 counts of possession of a high-capacity magazine, a petty offense. Last week, Killian filed formal charges against Morrow of possession of a stolen firearm, manufacture or delivery of 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, possessions of a firearm with a defaced serial number, possession of a controlled substance, possession of a firearm with no serial number, 2 counts of child endangerment, and 3 counts of possession of a firearm with a revoked FOID card. On Wednesday, April 30th, Morrow was arrested by Gibson City Police again, this time on a warrant issued for the alleged violation of his probation, but was again released from custody that same day. According to Ford County Circuit Court records, the warrant was issued by Fitton on April 29th after a petition to revoke Morrow's court supervision was filed by Killian. Morrow was serving 2 years of court supervision for driving under the influence of alcohol. And continuing with crime news, we have the Ford County Sheriff's Report. Paxton. The Ford County Sheriff's Office issued 40 traffic citations in April, including 8 for speeding, 4 for driving under the influence, 3 each for illegal transportation of alcohol, failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident, and operating on an uninsured vehicle, 2 each for a restricted driving violation, medical cannabis violation, unsafe equipment violation, and operating a vehicle with revoked or suspended registration, and 1 each for driving under the minimum speed limit, disregarding a stop sign, permitting an intoxicated person to drive, failure to display license plates, driving with an expired driver's license, illegal possession of cannabis, an equipment violation, driving on a revoked or suspended driver's license, driving with no valid driver's license, expired registration, and operating a non-highway vehicle on a roadway. Sheriff's deputies also wrote 49 warning citations and responded to 10 traffic accidents. 3 criminal citations were issued, 1 each for possession of a controlled substance, possession of an alcohol by a minor, and disorderly conduct. Civil process activity included 22 court summons in 34 attempts and 16 warrants served. The sheriff's deputies assisted other agencies 12 times and motorists 8 times. Other field incident complaint reports in April were related to civil and non-criminal complaints 20, traffic complaints 13, suspicious people and activity 10, suspicious vehicles 8, animal complaints 6, 9/11 hang-up calls 5, investigation follow-ups 5, and harassment 5, welfare checks 5, juvenile complaints 5, and domestic trouble 4. Income for the sheriff's office in April totaled $62,207, bringing the fiscal year's total to $316,904. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.